Hello. Welcome to North Valley Church's Sermon Podcast. We are currently in our series, Relationships. If you would like to know more about North Valley Church or our sermon podcasts, you can check us out on our website, nvcmd.org.
Pastor Dan. I am not Pitt G. Pastor in Training Grand. I'm Jim. So, just so everybody knows, there's been a lot of sickness in our church this week. And so I'm going to do my best to fill in. I am going to ask your grace. Dan texted me, emailed me on Tuesday and said, hey, can you fill in? Millie and I are sick. My wife tested positive for COVID Monday night. Our 2 1-year-old grandsons have been with us because my daughter's doesn't have air conditioning at her house. So, since Tuesday, 24/7, I've been taking care of the grandkids. I've tested negative 3 times for COVID. I'm good. Just want that out there since I'm up here without a mask. But I am good. I'm vaccinated. I tested negative. But anyway, it's been a long week to try to put a sermon together when the 2 1-year-olds are pulling on you and wanting to sit on your lap, and more than anything else is wanting to be fed. You've seen my grandsons, they're not tiny. So, I'm doing the best I can today. I didn't get a whole lot of time to practice in front of the mirror, so please give me some grace and bear with me. But we're going to try to start off by having a little bit of fun. We're going to do an exercise. This exercise is called the bus driver. So here's what I need everybody to do. School's getting ready to start, so I'm going to narrate a story to you. I want you to pull out your pens, your papers, your phone, take little notes or whatever, because at the end, there's going to be a test. There's going to be a test. So there's going to be, you know, you got to pay attention. You got to take notes to what's going on in the story so that you can ace the test at the end. Now I got to find my eyes so I can see. All right. So here's the deal. In honor of our local school starting back up in the very near future, I'm going to narrate a story, take some notes, there'll be a test at the end. Your job is simple, to take notes, and then we're going to see how good at listening you truly are. All right, so we all ready? You're the bus driver. The bus is a big, blue, beautiful bus. Blue because blue is my favorite color. That's what happens when you're born at the University of North Carolina and you root for the Tar Heels. Blue becomes your favorite color. Don't worry, that's not on the test. So it's a big, beautiful bus. The big, beautiful blue bus has 40 seats. Each seat can hold up to 2 people. All day yesterday, except for Jay and Mike, who are helping Brooke's dad move, you spent cleaning the bus. You washed it. You waxed it. You cleaned the windows. You drove it to the gas station and filled up with gas because today's the big event where you're going to drive the bus. So you got it filled up with gas. You checked the oil. You got it all ready for today's trip. You started the bus. You pulled out of the driveway onto the roadway headed for your first stop. At the first stop, you noticed a beautiful woman named Patty and her grandsons. Yes, that's, you know, me throwing my wife and grandsons in there. Patty was wearing a red dress with black shoes, and as usual, her 2 grandsons, Maverick and Hayden, were a handful, giving Patty all of the trouble that she could handle. As Patty settled into her seat, she pulled out strawberry-flavored yogurt bites and apple cinnamon puffs to help keep the grandsons happy so that they didn't interfere with the other passengers. You pulled the bus away from the curb, and you went towards stop number 2. At stop number 2, Jim and Daphne were waiting. Jim and Daphne are a wonderful senior citizens couple. Yes, that's my mom and dad. Jim and Daphne were a wonderful senior citizens couple that frequently rode the bus just to get out of their house in their retirement years. Jim wore his typical khaki pants, and a button-down checkered shirt. Daphne had on a pair of white capri pants and a Carolina Tar Heel blouse. She's a Tar Heel fan, too. You made sure to help Daphne up the stairs because she had knee replacement surgery recently and sometimes still struggles a little bit going up and down stairs. Well, Jim and Daphne immediately began to make a fuss over the two babies on the bus as you sit back down and head towards stop number three. At stop number three, the young dating couple Ben and Julie, yes, that's my son and his girlfriend, enthusiastically jumped on board. Ben always wore some type of team jersey or Hawaiian shirt with a pair of matching shorts and hat. Today's selection was a red and black Hawaiian shirt with a Portland Trail Blazers jersey over top of it, a pair of tan shorts, red loafers, and a black and red trucker hat. Julie had on a yellow sundress and a pair of chacos. They wanted to make sure the bus was going by the town center so they could go to lunch and grab a matinee movie. Daphne and Jim remarked at them being a good-looking young couple, and little Hayden immediately began smiling and flirting with Julie while Maverick tried to remove Ben's hat and sunglasses. Two more stops to go. You pull into stop number four, and at stop number four, Curtis and Hannah are waiting. Yes, that's my son and daughter-in-law. Had to get the whole family in so nobody gets jealous. You pull into stop number four. You see Gulf War veteran Curtis and Hannah waiting to board the bus. They each have a service dog with them to help them on their way. Curtis was wearing knee-length black shorts, a West Virginia University t-shirt, and Crocs, and always carried treats in his pocket to feed his service dog, Zoe. His wife, Hannah, had on a pair of denim shorts and a white three-button short-sleeve top with white open-toed sandals, put her hair up in a ponytail, and as she boarded the bus, she stopped to check to make sure her service dog, Cass' vest, was properly attached. Now you pull into the fifth and final stop at the town center, and after stopping, you notice that Patty unloads first with the two grandkids in tow and heads straight for the toy store. While Jim and Daphne, with a little help getting down the stairs from Ben and Curtis, go into Starbucks for a nice coffee and a latte. Hannah and Curtis and their dogs head for the specialty pet store, probably to buy more dog treats, and Ben excitedly pulls Julie towards the movie theater box office so that he can buy tickets before rushing to TGI Fridays for a quick bite to eat. End of story. Ready for your questions? Hope you're paying attention. Hope you took notes at all five stops. And I hope that, well, you all know that everybody mentioned in the story is a family member. So, I'm going to shorten it and ask you all one question. When I ask the question, I want you to shout out the answer. How old's the bus driver? I only heard one person give an answer. It's however old you are because you're the bus driver. I said in the very beginning, you're the bus driver. Right? So I don't know how many of you got it right. Somebody said halfway to 50 over there. By the way, for you guys that don't know, Nia Schwartz is halfway to 44 today, so make sure you say happy birthday to her. So a couple weeks ago, Pastor Dan started a series on relationships. In the first week, we learned about loving relationships, and last week we learned about ourselves. Today, I'm going to do my best to introduce you to the topic of listening. That's why we went through that exercise. Relationally and psychologically, there is no greater way to express your love for someone than to be a good listener. Pastor Dan would like me to add a personal note. This is Pastor Dan's note. This is not Jim McBride. Pastor Dan says that as a gifted listener, it is a pet peeve of his that we do a poor job of listening. So we're going to get started by looking at James chapter 1, verse 19. James chapter 1, verse 19 says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." For those of you taking notes or that have a bulletin, this is your first bullet point. God is in control. So in the opening passage of the book of James, we're instructed to maintain our trust in God even during hard times. In fact, we should even consider the hardships we're going through as joyful experiences. So I'm going to stop for a second. You guys that have heard me speak before know I try to use a lot of personal, family, and friend-related stories. So you're going to say, hey, Jim, I don't appreciate hardships. How are they a joyful experience? In the last 2 weeks, I want you to go back to 2 weeks ago today. What was that, August 8th? At my house, we hosted 10, 15 people for the grandkids' one-year-old birthday party. Actually, we got to go August 1st. August 8th was birthday party. August 1st, so I mean, let me step back. They already screwed it up. But it's not a story. It's the truth. It's actually what happened. So August 1st, my son and daughter-in-law live in Martinsburg, West Virginia. They rent a house. The air conditioner went out. So they have a two-story, four-bedroom house with zero air conditioning. The property management company says, okay, that's fine. We'll come take care of you. They showed up with one window air conditioning unit for two stories and four bedrooms. Luckily, they only need two bedrooms, but that was their solution. By the way, it's still out. The parts are ordered. It's supposed to be fixed hopefully this week. So my wife said, I'm babysitting the kids tomorrow. Instead of taking them back home, bring them over here. I got permission at Skycroft for us to use the pool to cool everybody down. Kids spend the night at my house. Some of you know that at 10 o'clock on August 1st, we rushed Hayden to the emergency room. He was 2 days from turning 1 year old. He couldn't breathe. Meredith put him on a helicopter and flew him to Children's National because they knew it was bad, but they knew they couldn't treat him because they're not set to treat infants. Almost lost him twice within about 36 hours. I was there the whole time with my daughter. You guys, most of you already saw him this morning. Obviously, he was in the hospital 4 days, came home, and he's like, okay, what's next? I kicked the butt of that. How's that a joyful experience? Well, it wasn't for about 4 days because I didn't know if he was going to come home. Now we fast forward to this past Sunday, the 8th, we have the birthday party. Same thing. Patty's going to watch the kids. Just let them spend the night Sunday night. That way I don't have to get up early and drive to your house Monday morning. Patty's sick. Patty tests positive for COVID Monday. Exposed the boys, me, Ben, everybody else. As I said already, since Tuesday morning at the doctor's office, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, probably 3 poopy diapers a day per child. They're 6. Granddad has been dad and granddad and caregiver 24 hours a day since Tuesday. I know now why you have your kids first and your grandkids second. If I had my grandkids first, I wouldn't have had my kids, probably. Hard times, right? Well, where's the joyful experience in that? Well, the joyful experience is I live close enough to my daughter that I was there to support her. I got to spend time with her. I got to hold my one-year-old grandson on his one-year-old birthday in the pediatric intensive care unit at Washington, D.C. Hospital and help nurse him through what he was going through. By the way, it was not COVID. It was not RSV. It was something called bronchiolitis. It happens 200,000 times a year in our country. My grandson was just one of the lucky 200,000, but it almost killed me. I'm also joyful that it didn't, and he's here today. But it's been a rough 2 weeks. I've had to use 7 of my 20 vacation days, and I already used most of them. So now the rest of the year, I get to work almost every day. So if I'm grumpy in like November, December, that's my excuse. I told you in August, okay? But hardships, but you make through hardships. I like to consider hardships learning experiences. If you get through the other side, what did you learn from them? Did you rely on God? Did you rely on yourself? I will tell you, when little Hayden was laying in the PICU at D.C., I prayed a lot. I even went as far as to pray that, God, if somebody's got to die, take me, not him. I've lived a good life. Never prayed that before in my life. My wife didn't like that, by the way. She said, I prefer you both to live. I said, well, that's preferable, but if somebody's got to go, let it be me. Right? So, we have to continue to trust God even during the times of hardship. If we truly trust God and that He is in control, we need to continue to obey Him. Beginning with this verse, James begins to describe what obedience to God looks like. If we trust and obey God, we need to learn to adjust. Listen to this. We need to learn to adjust the speed of our listening and speaking. If we believe God is truly in control, we can afford to take the time to understand. We can respond in a way that is helpful. If we doubt that God is in control, then we speed up our mouth and slow down our mind. As believers, we need not worry that we are heard and understood to get what we want. When we act impulsively according to our immediate desires or based on immediate reactions, we often act with a lack of control. And when we feel like we're losing control, we oftentimes get angry. I do want to point out that this verse is not a command to never feel angry. Anger is a human emotion, and sometimes it can be justified. What James is guiding us is that we need to learn to control or at least slow down our anger. In fact, refusing to let our anger control us is an act of faith in God itself. It is a choice to believe that God is in control, that He loves us, and that He is good. James is emphasizing that those who truly trust God do not settle for just appearing religious. They give up attempting to control the world with their words and their anger, and they humbly receive the word that God has planted in them. They listen to it, and then they proceed to do what it says. Now let's flip to Proverbs, chapter 18, verse 13. To answer before listening, that is folly and shame. There's actually one version of this that says to answer before listening, that is foolish. To answer before listening, that is folly and shame. So I had an experience while Hayden was in the hospital in D.C. that I want to share with you that I think explains this very well. My son-in-law wasn't there the first couple days. That was fine. That was agreed upon. That was great. My son-in-law shows up, had a hotel room, and between my son-in-law, my daughter, and I, we were taking shifts so that somebody was with Hayden 24 hours a day. My daughter was on an afternoon shift. My son-in-law were back at the motel. We're on our way back, and for some reason, I guess because I live in the country and not the city, we decided to leave the hotel that's 2.2 miles away from the hospital through downtown D.C., New York Avenue, Northeast, if anybody's familiar with that. Thinking, you know, 2.2 miles, that's like, what, 3 minutes? I can get back to the hotel or to the hospital in no time. Wrong. D.C., rush hour traffic, Wednesday. You do the math, it took us a lot longer than 3 minutes to go 2.2 miles. So, as we're approaching the hospital, we get to a red light. I can see the hospital. I got to make a right turn, go one block, and I'm in the parking garage, right? So, as we get to the hospital, my son-in-law, we're in the car together driving back, and we get to this red light, and as we're sitting at the red light, I look at the rearview mirror, and a young gentleman on a motorcycle was weaving in between cars and lane splitting between cars, and he only stopped when he got all the way to the head of the line, pulled in front of a car at the red light, almost in the intersection. Well, that, of course, set me off into my road rage rant. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I've been taking the night shift at the hospital. I got a little bit of sleep. I'm worried that my grandson's even going to live, and I'm watching this idiot driving between. So I make a comment. Now, I want you to know, I used to own a motorcycle. I've got no problem with people driving motorcycles. I like motorcycles. It's got nothing to do with motorcycles. It's got to do with the way this person was driving said motorcycle. Anyway, the point is, Curtis began speaking in support of the motorcyclist. Curtis is my son-in-law. He began trying to explain to me why the motorcyclist was doing what he was doing. I immediately interrupted him, gave him my 2 cents on lane splitting and biker showing off and being reckless. Curtis again tried to explain what he thought the biker may be thinking, and I again cut him off. This went back and forth for a little while, even after the red light turned green and we're going the extra block to the parking garage. I finally eased my verbal assault and began focusing on getting to room 3503 to see little Hayden. Well, I think in the days since this event, God has been speaking to me, which led me to doing this sermon on listening. Because as I was researching the Bible verses and doing things, I got to this verse. So I'm the type of person that loves to prove my point. So after listening to my son tell me it was safer for the motorcycle to do what he did and get to the front of the line in certain circumstances, and telling me how it's legal in California for people to do that, of course my response was, those people in California are crazy anyway. But I came home to do my research so I could prove my point. Guess what the research showed? There is such a thing as lane filtering. It is currently legal in both California and Utah. 3 other states currently have laws in front of their state of assembly, including Virginia, close to us, to allow what this person did in certain circumstances. And the research has showed that it's safer for the motorcycle and that less accidents are caused than when the motorcycle stops way back in traffic because cars don't see the motorcycle and typically run into them. Wow. Told you God was talking to me. I come to do my research to prove my son-in-law wrong, and I prove I'm wrong. So Curtis was over a couple days ago visiting his sons, and I let him know I owed him an apology. And I told him about my research. I apologized for cutting him off, as his argument was actually factual, and mine was fueled by my own personal opinions and frustration at that time. In a way, that is what God is telling us in this verse. We are not entitled to critique something or someone until we have demonstrated understanding of what we're critiquing. If we took this idea to heart, it may change the way we talk about the world around us. Has anyone had a situation similar to mine? Where maybe you found it easy and it made you feel good to evaluate, criticize, put down another person, put down their ideas, to be quick to form and give your opinions on issues only to have to eat crow and apologize later because you didn't really know what you were talking about? God's word warns us against this very thing. So why do we insist on giving an answer before we hear? There's that old adage, God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. So let's look at the practical application that God is giving us here. There's 3 practical applications. First, we must give ourselves to actively listening to others. Actively listening, that was the whole point of that opening exercise. Those of you that caught, you were the bus driver. When I asked you the bus driver's age, you just give me your age and you're right. We know what it's like when we are talking to someone and you can tell that they have not heard a word you are saying but are only waiting to pounce and give their thoughts on the subject. Am I right? You all been there. You've probably been on both sides of that. Well, let me bring it closer to home. You know how easy it is to nod your head and act like you're listening to your wife or your husband? When in reality, you were only planning what to say next? This is not only inconsiderate, but it keeps us from a true understanding and will actually increase our chances of giving foolish answers like I did in the car with my son-in-law. For kindness and wisdom's sake, we should give ourselves to actively listening to others, to focusing on what they are saying, and to seek to understand it, not merely using their time to talk as an opportunity to think of what we're going to say next. Second practical application, we must learn to be patient and wait for all of the facts. If I would have bothered to not let my problems and frustrations get in the way and spent time doing the research of the facts before interrupting my son-in-law, I would have looked a lot less foolish and wouldn't have had to apologize 5 days after the event. Third practical application. We must desire understanding more than giving our opinion. Listen to this indicting verse from Proverbs, also from Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18:2. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. Wow. If the habit of our lives is to parade our opinions rather than to seek to truly understand what we are talking about, we are nothing more than fools. On the other hand, a humble, godly person does not merely throw out his or her opinion. Rather, they only speak with true knowledge and understanding. Proverbs 13:16 tells us, in everything the prudent acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly. So as you look out on the world around you and seek to discern various ideas and teachings, give yourself to listening, to patience, and to real understanding. Then you will be wise, and your mouth will be a fountain of life, and you will avoid the folly and shame that inevitably comes along with being quick to speak and slow to hear. Next verse, a similar theme is followed in Proverbs 2:2. Proverbs 2:2 informs us, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding. In the book of Proverbs, learning is the short-term gain of information, which becomes knowledge when it is remembered and kept for later use. Wisdom is used in reference to the good and appropriate application of knowledge. Understanding is a comprehensive wisdom which can be passed along to others. Merely taking in and retaining information is not meant to be the end of our process. Nia is getting ready to start her teaching career. She doesn't know I'm using this example because God just gave it to me while I was talking. Nia is getting ready to start her teaching career. Nia doesn't want to just explain to her students and have them hear that the color blue is the color blue or that 2 + 2 = 4. She wants them to be able to use that information to further their knowledge. That is a foundation for them to build the rest of their academic career on. That's what God's telling us here. It's easy to retain and remember stuff, but that's not supposed to be the end of the process. Acquiring knowledge, especially the knowledge of God's commands, is a good and noble pursuit. However, living virtuously requires the application of that knowledge to our lives. Matthew 13:45-46 is another of Jesus' analogies of heaven. In that parable, a merchant was looking for valuable pearls. Such a businessman must first know how to identify good pearls from bad and rank their worth. The parable begins to sketch out our connection between virtuous living and discernment. Applying knowledge wisely requires a deliberate effort, making your ear attentive and inclining your heart. Those who purposefully pursue virtuous living by seeking wisdom and understanding, develop the quality of discernment. The merchant in Jesus' parable did not invest everything in the very first pearl he encountered. We do that sometimes. Bright, shiny object. Let's go invest in it. Let's go buy that. Let's go get that. Rather, the merchant used discernment, a practiced ability to distinguish what is good from what is bad. And then when he found a pearl of incredible value, he sold everything he had to obtain it. Rather than investing his life in something of mediocre quality, discernment allowed the man to make the most of his resources. In the same way, discernment allows us to separate profound wisdom from information of less value. More simply stated, once wisdom is properly valued, both the ear and the mind are captivated by it. Once wisdom is properly valued, both the ear and the mind are captivated by it. Our final passage today comes from the book of Mark, chapter 4, verse 9. This is a very well-known parable. Many of you probably know the parable. Then Jesus said, "Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear." The Gospel of Mark focuses more on Jesus' actions instead of his stories. Leading up to this point, Mark pointed out the different reactions people have to Jesus. Everybody in this room has different reactions. We don't all react the same way. So leading up to this point, Mark's been talking about different reactions people have to Jesus, his teachings, and his miracles. All these groups react differently, including but not limited to the Pharisees. You think the Pharisees acted different than the disciples did? The Herodians, even Jesus' own family, everybody reacted different. But the people liked, a lot of the people liked what Jesus had to say, but what did they like even more? His miraculous healings when he healed them. Those close to Jesus, the disciples among them, want to know what is behind the curtain, so to speak. The behind the scenes meaning of his teachings. So in chapter 4, Jesus explains why he is met with such diverse reactions. A large crowd was gathered on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and was trying to get close to Jesus to have him perform healing on them. So Jesus decides to head out in the water on a boat to teach them as they remain on the shore. He uses this strategy of storytelling by parables to explain the mystery of the gospel. In this way, listeners must work to understand the seemingly simple stories. During his telling of parables in public and time of private conversations with his inner circle, Jesus uses the terms listening and or hearing over a dozen times. And still, not everyone heeds his instruction. While the crowd is willing to listen to Jesus' stories, they have no interest in the spiritual meanings behind them. The inner circle often ask Jesus for clarification in a more private setting. It is in this more private setting that Jesus explains the parables act as a gateway. Those people that do not desire to dive below the surface are free to go on their way, while those that are drawn in by the simple stories will receive answers for their questions, answers which will eventually lead to forgiveness. These reactions are illustrated in this parable. This is the parable where you sow the seeds on thorns, on good soil, on shallow soil, on rocks. That's the parable we're discussing here. So, the reactions of the people are illustrated in the following parable. The seeds on the path are eaten by birds as Satan snatches the spiritual truths from their hardened hearts. Seeds in rocky ground are similar to those who hear Jesus' stories and react favorably, but do not have the understanding to keep their focus on Jesus in the face of hard times. The thorns represent worldly distractions such as wealth and pride that keep interested seekers from developing into true believers. Finally, the seeds on the good ground are those that produce spiritual fruit. As the worship team comes back up, we're going to close. So on the surface, this parable is a call for the listener to be attentive and discern the meaning of Jesus' analogy. Yet more than human understanding is necessary to interpret the parable. Only those who have been redeemed will have the true meaning explained to them by the divine teacher. So in closing, I want to ask you all something. If you had been in the crowd when Jesus gave this parable, which of the following would you have been thinking? Would you be thinking, hey, what's he saying? Maybe you would be asking yourself, is he trying to say something to me? Maybe you would be wondering which of the four different types of soil you are. Hey, which soul am I? Maybe you're thinking, I sure wish so-and-so was here to hear this. Or maybe you would say, here am I, Lord, use me. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for the time we've had to gather here today and study your word. Help us to remember as we go throughout our daily activities to listen to family, to listen to friends, to listen to coworkers. Maybe before we speak, we should just simply say, God, help put the words in my mouth that this person needs to hear. Don't let me speak before I know what I'm speaking of. Lord, here I am. Use me to build this relationship. In your name we pray. Amen.